this gives fodder to all those who have been trying to paint all ANCs with a bad brush.
Calls for congressional hearings on the EAC Tech investigation. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, October 5th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, a new poll finds the American public supports mid-level dental providers.
We all pay for not having enough access to dental care, so more and more adults and children are going to the ERs for dental infections.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The local Elks Lodge needs your help. Why? Because the need to assist the youth and veterans in our community is greater than the available resources. If you were involved in your local Elks Lodge in the past, consider becoming involved again. Contact your local Elks Lodge and see how easy it is to become reinstated. Information at elks.org. Elks care, Elks share. This message sponsored by the Alaska State Elks Association.
Former Alaska Governor Sarah Palin says she will not run for president. Her announcement today left little doubt that the eventual Republican nominee will come from the current field of contenders. Palin said in a statement that she and her husband Todd devote ourselves to God, family, and country. She said her decision maintains that order. Palin was the 2008 GOP nominee for vice president. She often hinted that she might run for president in 2012, but never committed herself. The arrest yesterday of an executive at the EAC Alaska Native Corporation subsidiary, EAC Tech, and two Army Corps of Engineer employees has some members of Congress clamoring for hearings and has Alaska's delegation worried about the fallout. APRN's Libby Casey reports.
EAC Technologies' parent company, EAC Corporation, fired Harold Babb Tuesday after finding out he'd been charged with conspiracy, bribery, and money laundering. He's accused, along with the two Army Corps employees and one of their sons, of padding government contract invoices to the tune of $20 million. The men used the money to buy cars, property, and luxury items. EAC Tech had a five-year, billion-dollar contract with the government for information technology and software. It got the contract through the Small Business Administration's 8A program, which gives advantages to Alaska Native corporations so their shareholders can benefit. Massachusetts Democratic Representative Ed Markey says Congress should hold an investigative hearing to get to the bottom of how the Army Corps employees and the Alaska Native Corporation executive were able to bilk the system for millions of dollars.
There are some serious allegations. I think it's important for us to have a hearing here in Washington so that we can understand the charges and understand the implications of what all of this means for the state of Alaska and for our country.
Markey says he wants to see what internal controls EAC Tech had in place to protect against illegal activities and whether steeper protections are needed. Markey is the top Democrat on the House Natural Resources Committee, which has purview over Alaska Native issues. But Congressman Don Young chairs the Native Affairs Subcommittee and is fighting Markey's push for a hearing. Young spokesman Luke Miller says the congressman believes four bad apples shouldn't overshadow the success of the contracting program. But Markey's not the only member of Congress pushing to investigate. The top Democrat on the Transportation and Infrastructure Committee, which oversees the Army Corps of Engineers, is also calling to dig into what happened. New York Representative Tim Bishop wants to know how the scheme could go on for years and be so extensive. Alaska Senator Lisa Murkowski and the rest of the state's delegation have fought to protect the benefits Alaska Native companies get through the Small Business Administration. She calls the scandal deeply troubling and says it's a setback.
This gives fodder to all those who have been trying to paint all ANCs with a bad brush. They can now say, see, I told you so.
The Small Business Administration tightened regulations for the 8A program earlier this year. Murkowski says she wants to know if the new regs would prevent such a theft and cover-up now.
Did these guys think that they were so far above a system that they were not going to get caught? Or was the system really that porous that nobody was checking? And this is where we want to know that the changes that have been put in place with the SBA regs really would help to ensure that nothing like this could possibly happen.
Senator Mark Begich's press secretary, Julie Haskett, emphasized that the EAC Tech employee is allegedly corrupt not because of the corporation's participation in the SBA program. Haskett says Senator Begich wants proper oversight rather than what he calls a showboat political hearing. On Thursday morning, the four accused go before a magistrate judge to ask to be let out on bail. But prosecutors say the charges are too serious and want them held until trial. In Washington, I'm Libby Casey.
The fate of two men accused of torturing and beating a man to death now rests in the hands of a jury. Jeff Hout of Bethel and Harry Williams of Queethluck are facing first-degree murder charges at the Bethel courthouse for the killing of 19-year-old Benjamin Kaiser of Hooper Bay last October. Attorneys wrapped up their arguments early Tuesday afternoon. The jury has been in deliberation since then and spent much of today reviewing testimony from the trial. Reporter Shane Iverson from member station KYUK in Bethel has been following the trial and joins us from Bethel. A word of caution, some listeners may find some of the graphic details of this trial disturbing. Hi, Shane.
Hi, Lori.
Shane, what evidence has the state presented against the two accused men?
Well, in the case of Jeffrey Hout, the Bethel man, there's quite a bit of evidence linking him to the crime. First off, he confessed to hurting, and in some cases he confessed to killing Benjamin Kaiser to some of his closest friends. They had to testify in court to that effect. Also, the body was found in his house behind a locked door in the residence that he lives in and owns. And there was blood linked to, forensically linked to Benjamin Kaiser found in his shop where he was allegedly tortured. The evidence against Harry Williams from Queethluck relies a lot more on the testimony of the star witness, Nick Cook, who told the jury that he was picked up by the two accused men early on the morning in question, taken to the shop where he witnessed them for about 15 minutes torture and beat the young Ben Kaiser. There's also some DNA evidence linking Williams's blood in the house where the body was allegedly moved to and where Ben Kaiser ultimately passed away.
I understand that the defense made their case in just a matter of minutes, which may have surprised some who have been following this. What testimony did they present for the jury?
Yeah, depending on when you started your clock, it could have been seconds, actually. They just asked two questions. They called, first of all, Hout's attorney made no case. Williams's attorney called the lead investigator, Police Sergeant Salyers, Chris Salyers from the Bethel Police Department, and they just asked him two questions about the height of the star witness, Nick Cook, and the height of one of the accused, Harry Williams, and that was it.
Did the defense have more to say during the closing arguments?
In Hout's case, his attorneys argued against a murder one conviction. They said that there is some evidence that he could have been intoxicated, and if you're severely intoxicated, it can be impossible to, what they said, form an intent. So if he couldn't form an intent, that he could not be found guilty of murder one and would have to be found, if found guilty, would have to be found guilty of one of the lesser murder charges. Meanwhile, the defense for Williams said that the state did not even prove his involvement. They said that the testimony of the star witness, Nick Cook, couldn't be trusted.
And Shane, what about the state? What did they present during their closing arguments?
They focused largely on the technical aspect of what first-degree murder is. And what they said was, we need to prove that these men intended to kill Benjamin Kaiser. So they laid out a list of how anyone could know that they intended to kill him. And some of that included the duration of the beating. They also pointed out that it was below freezing that night in October and that the men had stripped Ben Kaiser naked in a heatless shop, and then just the sheer amount of injuries. Basically, every square inch of Kaiser's body had been injured by blunt objects, as well as whips or wires of some kind. So they say all of that shows that these men did intend to kill Benjamin Kaiser. In Hout's case, they also pointed to the confessions he made. In Williams' case, they had to point to Nick Cook's testimony and all of the items which Nick Cook was able to tell the police about that they did later find when they executed the search warrant later that day.
Shane Iverson is a reporter with member station KYUK in Bethel. There's no word yet from the jury about a decision in the case. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a big cut in the amount the Bering Sea crab fleet can catch.
We all knew that there was going to be a decline, but this is close to 50%.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
the law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com. And by Northern Air Cargo. For over 54 years, Alaskans have entrusted Northern Air Cargo to transport their freight. Thank you, Alaska, for the opportunity to serve you for decades to come.
A concept based on an Alaskan program to make dental care more accessible is gaining support across the nation. The W.K. Kellogg Foundation released survey results yesterday showing 78% of Americans support the training of mid-level practitioners so more people can get dental care. KMBA's Jacqueline Estes has more.
Kellogg Foundation spokesperson Kathy Renke says Kellogg took on the issue of dental care for several reasons. Poor oral health is related to a number of chronic diseases, including heart disease and diabetes. Children with tooth pain don't do as well at school, and adults with missing teeth are less likely to be hired. Renke says the lack of access to dental care costs everyone.
We all pay for not having enough access to dental care. So more and more adults and children are going to the ERs for dental infections because they weren't able to see a dentist. And in many cases, hospitals are left holding the bag for that kind of care.
Mid-level practitioners, called dental nurses or dental therapists, have been providing care for decades in countries such as Canada, Australia, Great Britain, and Singapore. In 2007, Alaska Native Tribal Health Organizations were the first in this country to create a dental therapist program after studies showed the Alaska Native population has the highest tooth decay rate of any U.S. group. For instance, up to 5 times the national rate among 2 to 4 year olds. The Kellogg Foundation sponsored research to see if Americans think access to dental care is an issue and to gauge public reactions to the idea of mid-level dental providers delivering routine and preventive care. Mike Perry is a partner in the national public opinion firm Lake Research Partners. He says focus group results were unexpected.
It was always so surprising to me in these focus groups with just regular people when I asked the question if anyone's ever had a challenge getting dental care before or had, you know, couldn't afford it and had to put it off. And, you know, half the hands, 3/4 of the hands would go up. And many of those people had dental insurance. But they had a lot of high cost associated with that dental insurance, and maybe you couldn't pay for that procedure that month and had to put it off.
Perry says his team surveyed 1,023 adults representing the same demographics as the overall American population. Based on the results, Perry says more than 80% of Americans think the number of people who cannot access dental care is a problem. He says 41% of survey respondents said they or someone in their household has postponed dental care because of cost.
That's remarkable. I mean, 4 out of 10 Americans putting off dental care due to cost is just, you know, it's a travesty.
Perry says even people with insurance couldn't always afford high costs for dental care. Others didn't have dentists practicing in their area. Perry says those most likely to postpone dental care include those with incomes of less than $30,000 a year, the uninsured, and those without a high school diploma. In 2009, Minnesota adopted legislation authorizing dental therapists to practice. The Kellogg Foundation has been working with Ohio, New Mexico, Kansas, Washington, and Vermont to establish mid-level practitioner programs. More than a dozen states are considering similar options. In Anchorage, I'm Jacqueline Estes.
Elections were held in municipalities across the state yesterday, except for Anchorage. One high-profile race was for the North Slope borough mayor. Unofficial results are close. Charlotte Brower is leading, but doesn't have the necessary 40% of the vote to avoid a runoff. In that race, she will face either Fenton Rexford or George Amawak. It's too close to call at this time. Voters in Barrow have rejected the proposed municipality-run alcohol package store for the community. Matanuska Susitna Borough voters said yes to three ballot propositions by a healthy margin, approving a redrawing of borough district boundaries, a $32.1 million transportation bond, and a $214 million school capital projects bond. Matsu voters also elected two new borough assembly members, Steve Colligan and Darcy Salmon. In the race for mayor of the Kenai Peninsula Borough, the election is not quite over. None of the six candidates in the race reached the threshold of 50% of the total vote, so that means a runoff election will be held October 25th between the top two vote-getters, Mike Navarre and Fred Sturman. Peninsula voters also overwhelmingly rejected two ballot initiatives that would have raised borough sales taxes. Voters in Juneau defeated a 15-cent tax on plastic shopping bags. A Fairbanks ballot proposition aimed at reducing wintertime fine particulate pollution also failed. 60% of voters said no to the Healthy Air Protection Act. KUAC's Dan Bross reports.
Proposition 2 would have banned wood-fired boilers and coal-fueled heating appliances, increased emissions standards and violation fines, and expanded a borough heating appliance repair, removal, and replacement program. Critics call the measure too broad, but Prop 2 sponsor Sylvia Schultz says opponents mischaracterize the citizen initiative as a ban on all wood burning. Schultz says its failure sets up the loss of local air quality control.
The voters have handed the Assembly a situation that the Assembly can't do anything, and then the state's not willing to step up. And so it's all being handed over to make EPA into the bad guy because nobody else wants the job.
Schultz says it was a desperate stretch to try to protect public health by Citizens Initiative, a job better handled by government. Areas of Fairbanks regularly violate federal fine particulate pollution standards in the winter due to smoke from wood and coal burning. A relatively small number of wood and coal-fired boilers produce a lot of smoke and inspired the proposition to ban them. State Representative Tammy Wilson, who led opposition to Proposition 2, secured state grant money for a private company to develop a smoke-reducing catalytic converter for wood boilers. Meanwhile, an air quality compliance plan is due to the Environmental Protection Agency by 2012, and a 2010 voter initiative prevents the borough from banning, prohibiting, or fining people for the use of home heating devices. The initiative can't be modified until next fall, but Mayor Luke Hopkins says that doesn't prevent earlier action.
The Assembly can pass ordinances now that say these are in effect on October 29th, 2012. So there can be control measures that can be put in place.
Hopkins says the Assembly provides a better process for crafting an air quality solution than ballot propositions. He says the borough will continue to work with the State Department of Environmental Conservation. The agency is currently in charge of air quality enforcement, but has only taken minimal action to rein in local violators. Mayor Hopkins says borough outreach to encourage the use of cleaner burning dry wood and the appliance changeout program have so far failed to improve air quality. He says the program's financial incentives may have to be upped to help owners of high-cost wood and coal boilers switch to cleaner technology. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Wells Fargo, providing Alaskans steps to help reach their financial goals. Wells Fargo Bank, N.A. And by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. Join Alaska bars and restaurants from every corner of the state in taking a stand against secondhand smoke. The fact of the matter is, no Alaskan, employee, or customer should suffer the heart disease and lung cancer due to secondhand smoke. The benefits are undeniably positive for Alaskans and for the bottom line. Clean indoor air. It's good for health and it's great for business. For more information on smoke-free workplaces, visit alaskatca.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tobacco Control Alliance.
It looks like the Deadliest Catch production crew won't have as much to film this year. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game has announced a big drop in the amount of king crab the fleet can take. KUCB's Alexandra Gutierrez has more.
The amount of crab that's available for harvest in the Bering Sea region has been set, and Bristol Bay red king crab is seeing big cuts. The total allowable catch for the fishery has been set at 7.8 million pounds. That's a 47% drop from last year's quota. Heather Fitch is the region's area management biologist with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. She says that the Federal Trawl Survey is seeing low levels of recruitment in the stock. That means that fewer crab are showing up at legal size, which can be an issue of crab survival or a question of reproduction rates. She also says fishermen are catching less crab for the amount of effort they put in, a trend that's been in place for about 5 years now. There is one small silver lining, though.
There was one tow in the survey this year that showed a significant amount of very small crab, which the fishery wouldn't see for a couple of years, and we really need to see what happens next year to see if this if we see them again, and it wasn't just a fluke.
Edward Paulson is the executive director of Alaska Bering Sea Crabbers, an industry association. He says that it's too early to tell whether this cut will shrink the fleet size or put an upward pressure on already high king crab prices.
We all knew that there was going to be a decline, but this is close to 50%, and that's a steeper decline than we had anticipated. And what it means for the fleet is obviously just less crab to go around and shorter seasons for everybody.
As of Wednesday afternoon, the analysis of the snow crab stock wasn't complete. The quota is expected to be announced late this week or next. Because survey results have shown growth in the stock, some fishermen are hoping that a bump up in the snow crab quota could help offset the decline of the king crab stock. The crab season will open on October 15th. So far, 83 boats have pre-registered, but only a percentage of those are anticipated to actually fish. Just 65 vessels ended up harvesting crab last year. In Unalaska, I'm Alexander Gutierrez.
More and more Southeast government buildings and businesses are turning to woody biomass for heat. Some experts say the region is close to having enough demand to justify building a pellet mill, but it won't be easy. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld has the details.
Boilers heated by wood pellets or chips are being installed in Coast Guard and Forest Service buildings throughout Southeast. Sea Alaska is among businesses that have done or are looking at the same thing. And Yakutat is among communities considering wood-powered electrical generators. But in most cases, the pellets have to be shipped from Canada or the lower 48. Tongass Forest Supervisor Forrest Cole says that could be about to change.
There are a number of hurdles to cross, but I believe in the southern part of Southeast Alaska, we're probably pretty much getting close to a tipping point where we could supply the wood available off eroded land base to a mill that could create a pellet that would be somewhat competitive in the market today.
Cole says logging just to supply a pellet plant is not profitable, but he says there's enough timber, even with reduced harvests, to provide the mill leftovers that can be turned into pellets. He says if low sales cause mills to shut down, there won't be that waste wood.
If we lose the current timber industry in Southeast Alaska, we're going to miss a huge opportunity in order to take a product that's being produced today and basically a burden on the mills in order to make a pellet that could readily heat and get a lot of communities in Southeast Alaska off of oil.
The problem is they don't get it. They don't get what we're trying to do here.
Reed Smith, another energy conference speaker, says the Forest Service is unusual among government agencies. He says the Department of Defense is also bullish on alternative energy, but much of the rest of Washington, D.C. is slow to recognize wood energy opportunities. Smith works for the group 25 by 25, which is pushing to get a quarter of the nation's energy produced from renewable resources by the year 2025. He expects Alaska to be a leader in wood energy.
Bottom line is biomass is a huge, huge piece, and I don't think anybody anywhere in the United States is positioned better to capitalize on some new technology that's just going to be implemented here in the next 5 to 10 years.
Wood boilers are most often used as a source of heat. But Dave Schoding of the Clean Energy Application Center in Pullman, Washington, says it can do more.
Where you're putting in systems for pellets, think about layer caking on top a organic Rankine cycle system as well and get some power out of the deal as well.
He says a heat recovery system can add value to a wood boiler project. It can also replace expensive diesel generators when connected to a power grid.
So one of the ways to think this through is using the hydropower system as a great big storage battery. So as you do energy efficiency or renewable energy, you're preserving and stretching out and maximizing that cheap hydropower.
The Alaska Wood Energy Development Task Group is trying to spur wood energy projects statewide. The group is accepting statements of interest from those exploring community heating projects. The task group, a coalition of agencies, will hire consultants to visit project locations and craft reports that could help with funding. The deadline is November 4th. This is Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau.
The Bristol Bay Native Corporation is running a video contest. It's called Day in Our Bay. They're giving away video cameras and teaching people how to use them. KDLG's Daisha Eaton explains.
The contest is called Day in Our Bay. The idea is for Bristol Bay Native Corporation shareholders to document one day in their lives on film. Mary Kotsky is with Affinity Films Incorporated, an Anchorage-based social media company. She's managing the project.
Well, this is really an exciting concept because it's putting the tools into everyday people's hands to tell their own story about their lives, their values, and their views. And the way it will work is a postcard is going out, which is going to announce the contest and where to call or email to get their free Kodak PlaySport cameras, which they will then use to shoot on October 15th, the day across the bay.
Then the video will eventually be gathered and compiled under Kotsky's guidance into a 10-minute film. The BBNC is providing the cameras free of charge and sending mentors out to the villages to train people on how to use them. Jason Matrokin is the president and CEO of the BBNC. He says the BBNC is trying to highlight the voices of their shareholders.
There's a lot of interest in Bristol Bay, whether it's cost of energy or potential for development, or subsistence activities. And oftentimes, local folks are the last people to be heard. We thought this was a great opportunity for people to actually use their voice and to use sort of a day in the life or a day in our bay to describe for themselves what it is that's important to them and how they spend their time.
Matrokin says the video will inform those managing the BBNC about what's going on in their shareholders' communities. In Dillingham, I'm Daisha Eaton.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Shane Iverson in Bethel, Jacqueline Estes in Anchorage, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Alexandra Gutierrez in Unalaska, Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau, and Daisha Eaton in Dillingham. APRN's Libby Casey reported from Washington, D.C. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. And I'm Laurie Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
the Pebble Partnership, developing a comprehensive mine plan that meets Alaska's regulatory requirements while supporting sustainable fisheries in Southwest Alaska. PebblePartnership.com. Solstice Advertising, bringing creativity to Alaska businesses and nonprofits, from research and strategy to print, web, and broadcast production. Solstice Advertising, an agency for brands that want to shine. Alaska Business Monthly Magazine, publishing statewide news for over 26 years from Alaska's business sector, government, and industries. Information and subscription online at akbizmag.com.
And by
Doyon Limited, Interior Alaska's regional native corporation, providing oilfield services, government contracting, and natural resource development in Alaska and across the nation. Information at doyon.com.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.